So it'll be really interesting to see as businesses get more involved on these public networks, what they choose to do and where they choose to do it. I think that Solana has garnered a lot of attention.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of the FCAT Crypto Brief. This week, I'm joined by Jason Ward, David Shapiro, and our resident Solana expert, Weston Jones. I think we have a very exciting conversation for everyone today. Gentlemen, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining me. Before we get into our main topic of discussion, which is the Solana ecosystem, it's where it fits in the broader L1 space, and then also running a Solana validator, I think we got a couple news stories that would be interesting to cover. Jason, do you want to talk about Kraken and the Fed Master account?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So we heard earlier this week that the Kansas City Fed has approved an application for a limited purpose Fed Master account for a Wyoming entity. The entity is called Payward, but it's really Kraken Financial. So they're affiliated. So what this really means is that Kraken Financial, which is a special depository institution under the Wyoming banking laws, has gained access to the Fed settlement rails. So it's a first for a digital asset bank. What's really interesting here is that this bank takes deposits but does not lend. So it's a fully reserved model. And why people are really interested in this particular story is that it has been several years since the first applications from digital asset custodians were filed with the Kansas City Fed. And what this now means is that they, with direct access to the rails, they could effectively facilitate atomic settlement. So real-time payments on the Fed rail systems, and their business now does not require an intermediary to act as an agent on their behalf. So they can be more efficient and cost-effective. As you might imagine, not everyone is happy about this particular approval because the Federal Reserve is actually looking to finalize the requirements for a limited purpose Fed Master account, or sometimes referred to as a skinny master account. But the Fed has gone through with their approval, and it'd be really interesting to see whether this is a precedent with others to follow or how this really shakes out. So a lot of industry insiders have been watching this for quite a while, and it seems to mark a significant change in the posture of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because it's something that's been brewing in the background for a few years now. And TD Cowen actually put out a note this morning saying that they believe this will be the first of many limited purpose master accounts to come from the digital asset space. So certainly more to come here. And I think an important news story to keep an eye on. But now moving over to some Solana related news. David, you wrote an interesting story a couple of weeks ago about Zora. Do you want to just give our listeners a bit of background on that and how it relates to our topic today?
Sure. So Zora has launched a product that they call Attention Markets, and they've launched it on the Solana blockchain. And so if you remember, Zora has been known mostly for their Creator Coins project and social media, or I should say SocialFi project on the Base blockchain. So it took a lot of people by surprise to see that they were launching their Attention Markets over on Solana. So it's important to note that they are continuing to support their projects and SocialFi endeavors on Base, but they have launched a parallel product over on Solana. So what are attention markets? Attention markets are systems where users can trade on the future popularity of things like trends and memes and cultural moments as if they were tokens. And I think that it makes sense to launch something like this on Solana. I think it's sort of the logical venue for a product that's built around fast-moving cultural dynamics. It was the home of the meme coin craze. And I think that the decision to launch over there does track the idea of betting on the future popularity of trends, and it may sort of go with the other recent trends we've seen around prediction markets that have a lot of people sort of feeling uneasy. But I will say that, you know, there a lot of people have always had the demand saying, you know, I wish I could have invested in this creator early on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting just as like a new avenue to monetize memes, essentially. That's the way that I view it. And whether it's, you know, the most sticky form of doing so, or we see another way of this monetization pop up in the future, we'll just have to wait and see. But I think it's an interesting product and certainly an interesting experiment.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep an open mind to modern financial experimentation.
I would certainly agree with that. Well, with that, I think we can move on to our final news story, which is also Solana related. But some of you might know the name Magic Eden. It was originally an NFT marketplace launched on Solana in 2021. They quickly gained over 90% market share in NFTs on Solana. So relatively quick capture of market share there. And then when ordinals or NFTs on Bitcoin took off in early 2023, Magic Eden quickly expanded their NFT trading capabilities and gained 80% market share of that market. So by mid-2024, they were the largest NFT marketplace by volume, beating out both Blur and OpenSea. So definitely a lot of volume in the NFT space running through Magic Eden. However, last week, Blockspace Media reported that sources close to the matter had said that Magic Eden was actually discontinuing support for all Bitcoin and EVM products, apparently marking a full pivot to Solana and potentially a pivot into things such as prediction markets on Solana. So this is very interesting, as it's a very big pivot and a heavy bet on Solana. Now, there's still more news to come here, so we'll see what actually comes of this story. But I think it ties in with what we're going to talk with Weston about, which is really the Solana ecosystem. So I think with that, Weston, do you want to just talk about yourself, what you work on, and how you see the Solana ecosystem a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Matt. I'm happy to do it. I started here at Fidelity in 2017 in Fidelity Institutional. And then I came into FCAT in 2022. I was starting to gain a lot of interest myself in digital assets. My first introduction to Solana personally was actually late 2020. I was playing a game, like a blockchain game, and you know, I was paying a lot on gas, and I couldn't reconcile that quite. So I kind of started gaining an interest in Solana, and you know, started buying some digital assets over there. I've always been interested in the blockchain games, and then also like digital identity and stuff like that, and kind of club membership, which I think is at the core of maybe, you know, NFTs, ordinals, all of that, right? So that grew my interest. Here in FCAT, I'm working on back-end services related to our staking projects. And most recently, I've been helping architect a mainnet Solana validator, which we just brought to market in February. So yeah, that's been a real joy.
So Weston, what do you think it is about the Solana ecosystem and in the Solana trenches that really draws you in? And for the audience to know, you know, Weston has been involved in Solana since the early days of the network. And, you know, he's been my go-to guy for all matters Solana for years. And he's really created a reputation for himself within the firm, especially here in North Carolina as the Solana guy. So I have to ask, what is it about Solana, Weston, that captivates you so much?
Yeah, Dave, thanks. I think for me, you know, the first thing that really caught me was their vision, right? Or like the central idea of what they were tracking towards, what they were building. You know, they came out with this concept of NASDAQ on the blockchain. And I think that's still something that they're like actively aspiring towards today and building towards today. And you know, I don't think it's always been perfect, but I was very compelled by that. I would say that they had, you know, they had the luxury of the rearview mirror, right? That's always the case for any emerging network. But yeah, I think they've done a pretty good job of just prioritizing the things that they thought were important. And for at the time, I think that was, you know, just reducing costs mercilessly for the end user. I think there's also a friction component that, you know, it's really hard to operate on these public networks. And I think some of the builders in the Solana space did a really great job of kind of breaking down those barriers and just reducing the general user friction.
Yeah, Wes, and one of the things I think a lot about is that the Solana folks really looked at the blockchain trilemma in a different way. So if folks aren't familiar, the trilemma is really thinking about three components, of which it's theorized that you could really only maximize two. And those three legs to the stool, if you will, are security, decentralization, and throughput. And Solana has definitely put itself in a high throughput category relative to chains like Bitcoin. But again, they're really focused on security as well. So I think it continues to be an interesting relative comparison. And I'm curious for your take, based on the research you've done and the hands-on development, can you just share with us a little bit about how Solana's speed really makes it a challenging environment to work within from a developer?
Yeah, totally fair. So everything is really, really fast on Solana. I think the original design was like 400 milliseconds for a slot. But even that is not representative of the true pace now. It's usually around 300 or even less. So, you know, you're just looking at really fast finality. It's 32 slots to final, 12 to confirm. So yeah, it's a small window, just like a fire hose of data. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of indexing complexity to sort of monitoring what's happened on this chain to date, right? And just the sheer amount of data is ginormous, you know?
Yeah, and as you said, slot, many of us know slot is equivalent to a block on another chain, but there can be, such high throughput, low latency. You've got this perspective of how do you know the state of the chain, right? So it seems to me that that's one of those challenges as people are using this. And it's great when you're talking about NFTs or other social assets. But one of the things they've really been working on is making sure that they can have the capacity and the resiliency to be able to support, as you said in the beginning, that long-term vision of traditional assets trading on chain. So what I think about from an AFCAT perspective is, you know, what do we do, right? So we always tell people we bring the outside in, we work to educate and inspire people, and we build. So as a builder, have you found Solana to be one of the more challenging or most challenging protocols upon which you've done some building?
Yeah, Jason, I think it is a really challenging ecosystem to work in. You know, their approach to account structure is pretty different than, you know, the EVM landscape that we're used to. So that alone can be pretty challenging. But it's just, I think there is a tech stack there that is sort of close to what developers already know, in that it's sort of Rust end to end. And I think that's really helpful, actually. But it is a catalyst, I think, for people overcoming those challenges and breaking down that data. And of course, just the data availability of it alone, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
But I'll say that there's facets of, say, the, you know, consensus participation that are actually really helpful, right? So like, you know, the leader schedule on Solana, that's determined ahead of time, right? So we actually know a significant amount of time out when we'll be proposing our blocks and things of that nature. So I think some of those design choices actually can be very helpful for sort of the validation process.
Yeah, that is very interesting because, you know, it's not a proof of work system, it's a proof of stake system. You mentioned that on the FCAT side, we are participating in the validation of the network by running a validator. I think it's important to call out that we do so in a non-custodial way. So it's allowing holders of SOL tokens to delegate stake to a validator. There's never taking custody or possession or control of the SOL that is staked. But as you think about that type of capability, you know, really a main component for us is providing security to the network and frankly, learning. You know, FCAT has a history of learning by doing. And it's well known that Fidelity's initial foray into the digital asset space came by way of mining Bitcoin. So this in many ways is similar to that. And from these learnings, what we hope to do is be able to understand how the technology may be evolving, how industry may be evolving, and frankly, develop points of view on how we may be able to participate or in some cases understand what that evolution may mean to ourselves and to our end customers. So really, really interesting space. But we're also working in some other areas. And, you know, just zoom out for a moment. Think about Solana as one of many layer one blockchains or layer two blockchains. We think about this whole concept of interoperability. You know, we recently have disclosed that we're operating a distributed validator for layer zero to help with cross-chain messaging. So again, another example of that kinesthetic hands-on learning. But I'm interested to get your take. If you're talking about interoperability in Solana protocol language or SPL tokens, it can be interesting to look at how do we facilitate cross-chain activities, or Solana is known for wormhole and things that facilitate movement. You know, we're not talking about bridging. In our case, we're talking about message validation with layer zero. But as you work in this space, what gets you excited, or what do you think might be the potential for cross-chain interoperability with such a high throughput chain like Solana?
Yeah, I think actually, you know, you highlight this is, I think, maybe one of their key kind of challenges right now. I think in a lot of ways, you know, the incumbent, the EVM, has some clear advantages here, just the depth of the developer community. I think that there is a lot of effort going into, you know, how are we tokenizing these assets on chain? We're seeing that out of groups like Superstate and, you know, other network participants that are sort of bringing equities on chain. But I think, you know, it's still to be seen, right? Like, I agree that I don't know that we don't have an answer yet for like who takes it all, right? I think this is very much work in progress. But everybody's out there, you know, fighting to empower their chain as much as possible. And I think the reverse is happening too, right? I think a lot of other public networks are recognizing how important some assets on Solana are, that they want to, you know, make sure that they're capturing a way for end users to participate in that network, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And Matt, I want to pull you in on more of this dialogue too. But what I think about is it's not, you know, this whole argument of is there a winner take all? I think we're far from that. I would say we are definitely not in the business of trying to pick winners or losers. What we are trying to do in FCAT is gain experience with a variety of technologies. So you mentioned the developer community. I know that, you know, there's a lot of events that take place across the various protocol communities. But I also understand from some of my travels that in the Solana space, they have set up teams, loosely said teams, things like super teams, where they're literally trying to bring community together to try and help advance the technology and work on some of these challenges. So interesting, you know, we just recording this at the beginning of March, just last month, you had ETH Denver. You have ETHCC coming up. And of course, you've got Bitcoin 2026 coming up. So there's all these different developer communities. And I think it's very interesting and compelling to think about who can translate across those various ecosystems. And Matt, I know you spend a lot of time in our Bitcoin space, and you've been talking a lot about ordinals and others. I'm just curious from your take, what do you see as interesting for you as a perhaps incorrectly just bucket you as a Bitcoiner, and I mean that with all positive aspects of it. Why would you be interested in looking at another chain like Solana?
Well, see, I think it's just interesting because they're just completely different, right? Like, I think from a 1,000-foot view, you would say, okay, blockchain X, blockchain Y, maybe there are slight details or differences in the details, but at the end of the day, it's still blockchain. But I just think that is like completely incorrect, because as Weston could tell you, like the way things operate on Solana are very different from the way things operate on Ethereum. And when you go to develop, right, like in Ethereum, you're not using Rust. And when you're working with Bitcoin, you're using Bitcoin script. Like, these skills are very different. And then even within the communities, I think it's interesting to look at like how different communities and developer communities view upgrades, how they view development on the chain, and how they do community building, right? Like, I think what you were just talking about with super teams on Solana, it is really, really interesting. On Bitcoin, you know, we have our Bitcoin meetups and BitDevs, which are really, really awesome. And I think that anyone who's interested in Bitcoin should definitely attend those. But I think for users that are interested in different chains, the best way to kind of understand how developer communities differ is to go to different events and talk to people. And I think that that's always really, really interesting. And then also, I think, Weston, one thing that as a Bitcoin miner, something that I think sometimes doesn't get said enough is that Bitcoin mining seems relatively simple, right? You find cheap electricity, you plug in ASICs, you're done. Through my experience, I can definitely tell you that there are a lot more nuances than that. And there's a lot that you just have to learn by doing. So I'm curious, like in working on the Solana validator, what have you learned by doing that maybe you didn't foresee? And what are some of the challenges of running a Solana validator?
Well, I'll definitely get to the challenges, but since we're kind of already talking about community, I think it would be fun to sort of highlight how relevant community is to the security model, right? Like if you go and you look at the validator landscape, right? Super team, you know, blockchain clubs, NFT collections, all kinds of groups are running validators. And I think that's a really fascinating component to the security layer on Solana, just how relevant community is. But getting back to your original question, it's been really fascinating to see. You know, it's been 2 years in the making. We started kind of in-house with our own hardware. And, you know, as you may have heard, the hardware needs are extreme, right? I think that by design, I think the Solana model was sort of this like Moore's Law concept of just like throw the best computing you can at consensus and you'll get the fastest and cheapest possible outcome. And that I think still manifests today. There's a lot of great bare metal providers in the space to help do that. But yeah, it's extremely challenging and it does need high-end but consumer grade-ish hardware. I'll actually throw the question back to you and let you steer me in the direction you'd like to talk about it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think you made an interesting point, right? Like as we're talking about different blockchains and we talk about like the level of compute needed for validation, it's interesting because when we talk about Bitcoin, typically we talk about the view is the requirement is the ability to run a node on a Raspberry Pi. And then we talk about Ethereum and the view is generally a consumer laptop. And you get to Solana and the requirements are much higher.
Right. Right. So I think that the design there was they were trying to target hardware that was realistically feasible for an individual user. The mechanic that actually is almost more complex is sort of the stake weight in play, right? So I think, you know, it's kind of a community building game in Solana, right? To thrive, to succeed, you need to garner stake weight. The hardware is It's the easy problem. The real problem is how do I attract people to, you know, our cause, to choose us? You know, that kind of mechanic is actually, I think, the bigger component here, if that makes sense.
So how do you attract stake weight? Or like, you know, what are you seeing out in the ecosystem for validators and what tactics do they use to attract stake?
Oh, man, like there's all kinds of stuff. I remember I went to a Breakpoint 1 year and there was a very notable bare metal provider that was there and they were sort of handing out hoodies and stuff. And that was just to get you to stake a Solana to their validator. But like, that's obviously like the low hanging fruit. I think there's all kinds of gamified mechanics that some of these groups are sort of taking advantage of to attract that stake, you know? And I think that's really interesting. It kind of ties back to the composability of these assets and using that composability to engage your audience. I hope that makes sense. That's a little heady, but
I would also say I think it's generally one of those things where, and I'm not speaking of the FCAT run validator, I'm speaking generally any protocol, any validator. What I assume a delegator would want would be high performance, high security resiliency, because if they're going to put value, delegate value, basically putting it at risk, they're going to want to ensure that the operator of the technology that they're choosing to pledge their tokens to is doing so in an efficient and effective way. So I think there's varying degrees of commission that validators can play. And, you know, I would imagine that for those who are performing quite well, they're able to have a competitive commission rate. I think for those who may be starting out, they might offer a little bit higher commission because they're looking to try and garner a higher stake weight. But I think the important thing for a participant in the ecosystem to understand is if you put your tokens as delegated to a validator in any form, you need to understand what is the actual underlying mechanics of that. And is there actually value at risk? And by that, I mean, is there slashing involved? Or is it a non-slashing protocol? Because you could get a higher yield if you're willing to expose yourself to potential slashing, so the risk. But Weston, so you know, just a quick comparison. I know we're going to be short on time in a minute here, but you know, slashing Ethereum, slashing Solana, are they the same? Does one not slash?
Yeah. I think, as you might know, the slashing is not currently a feature on Solana. That is something that they are saying is in the pipes, that is still to come. But at this time, it's not currently in place. So that actually does give the end user just a ton of flexibility and lack of fear, right? I think there is a powerful aspect to the delegated proof of stake model where, you know, you choose to stake there and then you can pull that stake in a very short time frame. Basically, by the end of the epoch, you can have your tokens back if you're unhappy with the operator's performance. So I think that's actually a pretty powerful mechanism in terms of the staking model is extremely accessible. No slashing at this time. So no consequences for an end user if they decide, I don't like the way this operator performs, or I want to reward this other operator because I like the way that they conduct themselves in the community, whatever your reason would be, you know?
And as you say, the deposit withdrawal queues can be quite accelerated and quick on Solana, whereas we see in other ecosystems like Ethereum, they can extend to multiple weeks, even multiple months, depending upon network congestion.
Right. I mean, you're looking at up to 2 days sort of maximum. And so that's great. It's just a powerful mechanic that reduces that friction. And the fact that in essence, you know, when you delegate your Solana, it's actually still your account. You haven't given your tokens to anybody or anything like that. So the threshold is very low. You can stake with as little as one soul, a tenth of a soul, whatever you got, you can stake with that. And that alone is also a powerful enabling mechanic, I think, for network participants.
And as I understand it, the protocol itself does the distribution to that delegator, right? So there's no intermediary that is receiving the rewards and then passing them on, as might be the case with other proof of stake systems.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're actually just working with a smart contract, a system program, to delegate your tokens on your behalf, and you'll communicate again with that smart contract to retrieve them. And yes, the rewards, they push directly to that stake account.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Now, Weston, before we wrap up here, I do have just one more question for you. I think it's a popular narrative to kind of frame the Ethereum pivot to focusing on the L1 as more of a threat of competition to Solana, right? It's kind of like an L1 competition to try and take some of Solana's market share. Now, I've heard some differing takes on this point, and I'm curious your view. Do you view Ethereum Solana as in direct competition, or do you view them as potentially different use cases with interoperability needed?
I think that both are true. I think there's still an active, contention. I think they're still vying for a lot of the same activities and behaviors. But at the same time, I do think that we're seeing a natural sorting of interests and sort of bucketing. So it'll be really interesting to see as businesses get more involved on these public networks, what they choose to do and where they choose to do it. I think that Solana has garnered a lot of attention, right, from sort of this retail layer. And that may continue to consolidate over time. And that'll be really interesting to watch play out. So both, I think.
I think that's a great answer. It sounds like we're going to have you on in about a year or so. And we'll have this conversation again and see where things shake out.
Awesome. Yeah, I would love it.
Awesome. Well, Weston, thank you so much. Your insight has been super interesting. And thanks, everyone, for joining.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution would or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2026 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.